Okay, hello again. Some are already here on the call, and actually it's time to start. So can we start then? Let's not punish those who are on time. So, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. No one in evening zone. Nevertheless, we received some apologies from Alejandra and from David. No apologies from others, so I really hope that they will be with us. So, let's start with the first agenda item. That's the guideline of the council election procedure. Currently, we finalized the guideline and we sent it to the council. Councillors have time at the end of the week, and then we will send the guideline to members list for public comment. 2 weeks public comments, and then hopefully we can adopt the guideline in the next council call, which is the second part of September. We kind of hoped to run the new elections according to the new guideline, but we didn't have the public comment period, so it was not possible. That's a short update, but regarding this particular guideline, there's one other thing I need to be mentioned. As you know, according to the ICANN bylaws, ICANN Communicate has to run not only specific reviews, but also organizational reviews. Organizational reviews, they review the work of a soldier. We asked Martin and Ben, could you please mute the position with some noise from your mics? Thank you. The council asked the ICANN board to postpone defer our review until the next year. Currently the board hasn't decided yet, but the board committee that deals with this, with the review, they strongly support the deferral. Because, well, first is that we cannot, but we have no capacity to deal with the review at the moment, and it looks like MSSI? That department, they also have no capacity because all the reviews are running parallel. They were also very happy to do it next year. Nevertheless, in preparation for the upcoming review, sooner or later we'll have the review, we'll have to undergo the review process. I started reviewing recommendations from the previous review. We already had one review more than 5 years ago. There was this review team that did the review. They came up with recommendations, like 12 recommendations. And then there was a working group. I don't know how that working group was composed, but the working group reviewed the recommendations and came up with some conclusions, whether to they supported or on the contrary, they thought it's not a good idea at all. So currently I have tried to get all this information from the report. And I think that in preparation for the upcoming review, we need to do some self-examination. And the idea was that probably a GRC, members of the GRC, they know the situation much better than any other CISMESO member. So we could do this, go through all the recommendations and see how it whether it had been addressed or not, and what needs to be done so before the meeting. I'm not going to bore you with all the details of the report and recommendations. No, there are some things that we should address as the group that is mandated to review all the documents and update them. Currently, I'd like to talk about one particular recommendation. That's recommendation 9, and the recommendation is to introduce a limit to the number of terms that can be served by CISMESO Council members. And it was discussed during CISMESO meeting in Brussels. Oh, it's not a bad recommendation. I think it's a good thing to have some limits in terms. But when the working group that reviewed the recommendations, they also said, oh, okay, it's not a bad idea, but the situation is that the number of volunteers for service on the CISMESO Council seems to be limited by the workload of the Council and by other mitigating factors. So that's why the working group agreed with the public comments that stated that this recommendation is dependent on the implementation of Recommendation 10, which is the next one. The next one is another guideline that we're reviewing. It's it said that it's council should clarify the roles of the council, the chair, and another. So and that's actually what we did. We have a clearer list of the things that need to be done by councillors and chair and vice chairs. So, if we are going to address this recommendation, it should be done in the guideline, in this guideline on the council election procedure. At the time of the reviewing of recommendations from the review, it was thought that we have not so many volunteers to ensure that we can have limited number of terms. And actually, I'm afraid that's still the case. We do not have a show of hands of those who want to serve on the council. And actually, I can see it's almost every election, during almost all the elections, we have uncontested these candidates, so one candidate per seat, which is not good. Of course, it's always better to have a choice and more volunteers to do the work, but the situation is as it is. And during one of the recent elections in Latin American region, we had to ask, actively seek for volunteers because there was none. Plus, yes, Stephen pointed out, it might cause problem for North American region as well. So my proposal is that we look at this recommendation and we come to the conclusion that it's not going to work. That's why we do not introduce any term, any limit to number of terms that can be served in the Swiss National Council. We also would like to ask Joachim, who's usually our elections manager. So probably we could have a summary of all the recent elections and see how many volunteers they have, nominees we have for each seat, and just to show that unfortunately this is not possible to introduce term. We might end up with no councillors at all. Any comments on this one? Yes, Martin.
Thanks, Katrina. Yes, I do recognise the problem, but I think actually just saying it's a problem and is not solvable isn't actually a good idea. And I wonder whether perhaps the job of addressing the problem is probably not within the Guidelines Committee role. But I think just turning around and saying that, well, we won't have a limit to the number of terms because it's too difficult, isn't actually serving the community very well. So at least I think I would want to have an aspiration that once a councillor's there, they don't just stay there time after time after time. And then the other thing, which I think is probably the very much more important thing, is for the CCNSO itself to start considering how to improve engagement, how to get people to stand forward to take responsibilities. I recognise that North America is a particular problem and always has been and always will be because of its very small size. And the fact that it still has a number of, it still has two councillors. But even there, the issue of lack of people standing forward is a bit of a condemnation of people's engagement in the CCNSO. And I don't think we, from the Guidelines Committee side, should just be, well, okay, that is as it is, and therefore we will waive the rule. I think we should say it should be generally expected that, and then you might then wish to say in exceptional circumstances, where no other candidate is willing to stand, the councillor can carry on for a further mandate. I feel very, very uneasy for anything that sort of moves away from, and then you end up with a small group of people who are there forever and ever, and that just seems to me to be entirely wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Of course, they're not saying it forever and ever. You know, nobody says forever and ever. People retire. As you may know, actually, Martin, you've never been a councillor. Well, maybe you were at some point, but keep in mind that. So people do retire, so that's not that they're staying there for forever. But I think that this actually was discussed by the members. So it's not, it's not that the GRC decides. Bart, I see you hand it up.
Yeah, thank you, Katrina. This is Bart. Would it be helpful if I see if I can find up and unearth the transcript of the discussion in Brussels? I recall that, so that's 2010, when these initial suggestions of the external evaluators were discussed. And I know this was one of them, which caused quite a considerable feedback, and so for the DRC to at least to either to refer to it or in future so it's for others to look at it. So so that's one. So if you want to, I can look it up. The second thing is probably, and that's related, it's more a matter of whether the circumstances have changed since 2010, when the membership decided this recommendation was not fruitful at the time. So maybe that's another way of looking at it. And I say one of the arguments at the time, I do recall, it was, say, what Martin was expressing, the aspiration, but I can't recall, say, the arguments that were used at the time. So out of curiosity, even for my own, so I don't mind looking it up if you want it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. I think that would be really helpful. Thanks, Bart. Yes, let's see what people were thinking that time. We could also present it to the members and say, okay, currently we do not have, we did not introduce any terms, but so if those were the arguments 7 years ago, if something has changed, let us know. Yeah, and again, if we go back to the bylaws clearly have a number of terms for board members, but they do not mention any limits to number of terms, please, for citizens or conflicts. I don't know about Gene, so, but I know that they have internal rule and they do rotate, not staying forever and ever. Okay, so, yes, Bart?
Just one more observation, comment, however you want to call it. As you said, say, the CC&O review, organizational review, is most likely to be deferred. However, and that was a bit vague, but it looks like at the end the CC&O will request, so very low key, to start a self-evaluation. So this could be part of it, check whether any of the circumstances have changed, and I could imagine that the council would ask the GRC to have an initial look at this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think that we are in a position to make to do some initial look at all the documents that we have reviewed and updated, and those that we still need to review. And then we present our findings to the door, and then the council will take it from there. Okay, so let's summarize. First, Jokke will see how many volunteers we've had during the past years. Then Bart will find the arguments of the membership at the time when this recommendation was discussed. And then when we send the guideline to the CC&O members, we mention this recommendation, we present the arguments there and ask if there's some other their opinions now, and if they would like to see this limit in the guidelines. Okay, so that's the plan. Thank you. Let's move to the next agenda item. Crowdfunding guideline. Second, I don't know, I'm not sure if that's second, I think that's the tenth reading at least, but second from if we start counting from the last call. So, Jokke, the floor is yours.
Hello? Hi, Katrina. This is Chopin. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
So we have received no further comments regarding the travel funding guideline. There were two outstanding issues from last week's call. First of all, when you go to paragraph number 4.1, it mentions there's something that in case the guidelines do not provide guidance or when their impact is unreasonable, that the chair has the final say. However, this paragraph conflicts with what is being mentioned at the bottom of this guideline in 8.2. So I was wondering what we should include there. In 8.2, it says that in the event the guideline does not provide guidance and or the impact is unreasonable to conduct the business of the CCNSO Council, comma, or the chair of the CCNSO may decide to override the guideline. So 8.2 and what is mentioned in 4.1 need to be aligned to make sure that we say the same thing. That's one comment. Secondly, regarding the criteria, those are included in 7.1, the selection criteria. Last week, there was reference to the fact that weight needs to be added to the various criteria. However, I've received no suggestions regarding how this weight should be applied to those criteria. And I'm also not sure if this is the right way to ensure objectivity. The CCNSO Travel Fund Committee consists of three members, and I believe that a combination of the decisions of those three members and a compromise reached by those could be enough subjectivity in order to make sure that the right applicants receive CCNSO travel funding. I was wondering what your views were regarding this last comment regarding the weight to be added to the criteria. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jorke, for the summary. I can refer going back to the discussion we had during the last call. We had a set of criteria. They all very good. Going to present, yes, no. Going to participate in working group, yes, no, and so on. And then we have one example about our liaison. Most probably our liaison will have to sit. Ben, could you please mute? Ben, please mute. Okay, I'm not sure that Ben can hear me. Ben, could you please mute? Maybe it is muted. Okay. Liaisons are sitting in the meetings of the respective SOVCs. So they definitely cannot present. Most probably will not present, and maybe, not sure, but could be that they don't have time to participate in the work of working groups. So the thing is that if we consider all the criteria the same, and we add points, if you have yes for each yes, for example, you get a point, then liaisons may never get enough points to get funding. And if that's the case, then, that's not fair because they also participate and they're very active, but they do not present, they do not participate in the work of working. Well, they may participate, but they may not. Or sometimes maybe they do not. So that's the reason why I thought that we need some some weight added to some criteria. Maybe not all, but you know, somehow to see that it's not possible to get many points for each of these criteria. Yes, Bart.
Would it be more helpful to say you got the Travel Funding Committee, which are councillors, etc., and some of them are on this call already, to say that the council once a year, when the Travel Funding Committee is formed, provides them some instructions, more general instructions than going down the path of weighing the criteria, because that's an endless route, because say, once you start adding weights, then you have the criteria, say, how should I weigh a kind of letter from a applicant, etc. So leave it up to the Travel Funding Committee itself, but give them, say, when they are appointed once a year, some instructions, say, for example, that liaisons are considered very important, but at the end of the day, it could be that, say, some very high-profile presenters are needed. So that it's more in the discretionary power for the Travel Funding Committee.
Okay, thank you. But if we give them criteria, that means that it's already not for them to decide. If we want them to fill in the table for each application with criteria, already not so easy. Well, I mean, if not that it's not so easy, but it's difficult for them to decide on behalf. Well, if they look at the criteria and they see 10 yeses for one and two yeses for another, I think if they decide, then apparently they go for the first one. No, it's just. Martin?
Thanks, Katrina. I must admit, I as I say in the chat, I agree with Bart's thinking in that criteria on their own are important but can't stand alone. But weighty criteria turns them into a very blunt tool. So essentially you're ending up just counting how well a person is scoring against some fairly generic criteria, rather than actually turning round and saying, what we're looking at here is, as a committee, in other words, we are a thinking committee, rather than just an automaton, that we are looking at what we want to achieve and how we are going to achieve it. I think one of the problems I see of weighted criteria is that diversity of the selection is inclined to reduce, particularly when people know what the weighting is, because then they will focus on that particular weighting, and the ones that don't fit in that weighting don't bother to apply. So, I think we do need criteria to help make sure that we know what the selected candidate is likely to achieve. But at the same time, we should be encouraging the committee to start looking very much more deeply about what their selection will mean for the composition of involvement of people in the work of the CCNSO. And the point that you made, Katrina, I thought illustrated that quite clearly. that liaisons have a very important function, but that function is unlikely to of itself beat many of the other worthy functions that we have then put in with a particular weighting against that name. So to some extent, I actually think that the selection of candidates should be looking at what the candidate will bring to the CCNSO, and that we're also looking at improving the diversity of the people who are attending, and not then just focusing, as is so easy to do, on those people who appear to have the highest score when you go down and just fill a series of check boxes. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Martin. I've been on the Travel Funding Committee, and I know how it works. Well, it's good to think about it in theoretical terms. Well, in practice, it's a completely different thing. Okay, so what are the proposals? Okay, yeah, I saw one, Jokke proposed one, an additional criterion about the applicant is an important contributor to the CCNSO. But again, if we added as another criterion amongst many criteria, I don't know how this going to help. So I agree that it would be a good thing, but only if it adds something to the selection process. So again, knowing how it works, and yes, you're absolutely right, there are only three people. Yeah, Bart?
I think, say, Martin, and you already touched upon on a way forward, that ultimately, if you look at the goal of the travel funding, is to, say what is most important or what is the most beneficial for the CCNSO. So that's the ultimate goal, so that's the high-level criterion. And that's how you weigh the other, say, the list of criteria that has been introduced in the guidelines. So you always say the Travel Funding Committee is always tasked to look at what is most beneficial. But say in order to help them, you've got the list of criterion. So it's that criterion as, say, an important contributor. It's another way of looking at it. But say it's what is most beneficial is should drive the committee. And then to assist them, you got the list of criteria. But others could be relevant as well in future. So maybe that's the way to frame it.
Could you please formulate the proposal? So we have only we go through several steps. For example, first step. You answer the question, is the applicant important contributor to the CCNSO? Yes. Then we go to other criteria, and if no, we get him
My advice is not to include that one as important contributor to the CCNSO, because that in itself is already very vague and full of different, very subjective. Recognizing this, but I would say the first step is that say the Travel Funding Committee is tasked to assign and travel slots to those applicants whose attendance would be most beneficial for the CCNSO. That's the ultimate goal. To assist them in finding this, you have a list of criteria or maybe even soft criteria that may help them. But say the ultimate test for the Travel Funding Committee themselves is what they perceive to be the most beneficial for the CCNSO. most beneficial. So effectively, you could say, okay, it's one criteria, and there are some sub-criteria which are included, but and other things that the travel funding committee finds relevant. So it leaves a lot of leeway to the travel funding committee. They are assigned once a year by the council anyway. So it makes it easy. You have some guidance. People have some guidance from the travel funding committee what to include, but it allows the flexibility that we need. Does that make sense to you?
No, it always makes sense. Whatever you're saying, it makes sense, but I'm just trying to imagine how it's going to work in practice. Those councillors on the travel funding committee, they have the guidelines, right? They have to work according to the guidelines. So how they're going to use these criteria? So first, I don't understand from the practical perspective. If I was on the travel funding committee again, I don't understand how would I be supposed to come up with the decision using the criteria, list of criteria. I would definitely fill in the tables and then say, okay, this particular person has more fits more criteria than another one. That wouldn't be the right outcome. Yeah, okay.
I think it's maybe Christelle, you can allude to it, but I think ultimately the real rationale, or however you want to say, is at one point this is what the travel funding committee finds to be the most beneficial. That's the rationale, and I realize it's full of subjectivity, but that's why you have a larger committee, not just one person, but three persons, and preferably from different regions, etc., and different roles. And then to assist them, to make it even more, to assist them in their, to make it more objective, or recognize that it can't be truly objective, you got the list of auxiliary criteria, because I think it can't be more than this. And I don't know, maybe Christelle, and you have past experience as well, Katrina, but maybe Christelle, you can allude whether this would work for you.
Okay, thank you, Bart. I see Christelle wrote in the... Christelle, yep. Yes, please. Christelle, pick up.
So I understand Bart's position, and I believe within the travel funding committee, the issue is to remove subjectivity as much as possible. So with the new guidelines, we have more criteria that will help us. But if we could put more roadblocks, so we can remove subjectivity as much as possible, that would be the best.
Yes, thank you. Well, I have a proposal. My proposal is, so we have a meeting in Puerto Rico, and sometime after Abu Dhabi, we'll have to search for funded travelers. So I propose that we run a test. So we ask the travel funding committee to select the funded travelers according to the way they are used to that, so in a conventional way. And then when they have selected those people, we give them the guidelines. Okay, this exercise probably won't work with Christelle, but nevertheless, we give the guidelines and ask them to re-evaluate the candidates again, and we see, first we see how it works in practice, and then we compare the results in the real life situation with real applications. Okay, Christelle agreed. I hope that this exercise will work. Well, of course, it means that we won't have this guideline adopted. We'll have it probably in December, I hope. So, yes, Bart.
This has to do with the other point that Joker raised around striking one of the two sentences, 4.1 or 8.2. Apologies.
Okay, so in November we have the call. Yeah, okay, good. Then in December we can adopt the guideline and see how it works in real life before we adopt it. Yeah. So, okay. Any objections? Joke, please.
Yes, Katrina, just one comment. The names of the CCNSO funded travelers need to be given to ICANN Constituency Travel latest 8 December. So if the new guideline is not yet in place, everything will still happen according to the old guideline. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. That's what I said. Before we adopt the guideline, we run a test. We ask, our three members of the travel funding committee, they select review applications, they select the candidate, and then we ask them to do it again, we give them the guideline, and they review the same applications again. It shouldn't take much time because they already reviewed them. So, and then we compare the results, and we ask for feedback from Margarita, Christelle, and Debbie, I think, yes. And, and when we see, first, if it works, then we proceed with the adoption, travel fund, Younger and Christelle and Suleiman. So, and after that, we see, we got a feedback from Yangam, Christelle, and Suleiman, and if that's okay, we proceed. If not, then we just need to tweak. And then I think the most interesting part would be to see if how different the results are, and if they are different. If they're not different, probably we can live with the current guideline. Okay, that was... side comment. Okay, so let's try to test it. With that, we move to the next agenda item. It's rejection action procedure. Stephen, how are things? I see Bart has his hand up. Is this about the guidelines?
It's still about the travel funding. It's the point Joker raised initially about the 4.1 and 8.2. My suggestion is to strike 4.1 and leave with 8.2, because then this part is completed, and the only thing is open is...
True. I agree. Forgot about that one, but my proposal was just the same. Personally, I agree. So Stephen agrees as well, and I don't see any options. Okay. Thank you, Bart. Stephen.
Good morning, everybody. I left my windows open last night, and it's 11 degrees in my apartment, and I'm cold. Rejection guideline draft has been completed. I sent it down to for a sanity check. It passed the sanity check, so I think we're close to throwing it at you guys. Sections 2, 3, 5, and 6 are boilerplate stolen from the approval guideline. Section 1 is basically Section 1 from the approval guideline, but the content's a little bit different, citing what we can reject as opposed to what we can approve. The meat of the guideline is Section 4. I would propose that we nibble around the edges and begin by reviewing Sections 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6, and then once that's out of the way, dive into Section 4, which is the meat of the guideline. Section 4 has two principal components. One is when the CCNSO is acting as a decisional participant, that is, someone within our community has stepped forward and complained about something, and the CCNSO takes up their cause and proposes a rejection petition. And the other component of Section 4 is when the CCNSO is asked by another decisional participant to become a supporting decisional participant, and that means we would lend our support to a rejection petition that originates out of another SOAC, for example, the GNSO. So that's where we are with it. I need to do a little formatting tweak, and other than that, I'm ready to ship it to whoever I need to ship it to so we can take it to the next level and start discussing it. Trina, back over to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Stephen. Thanks, Ben, for the sanity check. So we're waiting for the guidelines, and as soon as we have it in our mailboxes, we start reviewing it, and onto 12 pages, where the font size are 11, 12, 14, 8. Okay.
11, I'm not sure. What's the mechanics am I getting this out to everybody?
I will just send it to the list, I think. You want me to review it first?
I'm going to send it to you.
Okay.
I'll send it to you and Bart. You guys can deal with it.
Okay. Send it to us, and then we, when we're done with it, we send it to the list.
You'll have it by the end of the day.
Thanks a lot. Your day or my day? Certainly morning in your place.
Your day, I think.
Okay.
Just want to update the version number.
Okay, thanks. It's already almost 4 p.m. in my part of the world, so you better hurry.
You'll have it by breakfast tomorrow.
Okay. Okay, thanks. That's finally a very nice breakfast. Thanks. Thank you for that. We have just one agenda item for the next call, rejection action procedure. IRP, you know that David Perry, unfortunately, could not join us today, but he sent some information. The group drafted guidelines for SOACs on recommendations how to do the selection. And that draft is currently sent for comments to the relevant ICANN staff, I think. So they're working on the process, and hopefully we'll have some more detailed information soon. Okay, and next one we have a work plan. So what do we need to do and when? I think we've lost track again. But, we have from the last time, so we had Approval guideline is done. Rejection guideline, we're working on the rejection guideline, and we this is a really hot topic on our plate. Travel funding currently, again, postponed it again. So in December, we're going to look at it again. So either we move with it as it is, or need to do some tweaking. What else do we have? I think there are some other guidelines we're working on, but okay, yeah, we need to. Okay, in Abu Dhabi, MSSI team will present operating standards. So could be that after Abu Dhabi, we have to revisit the guideline on specific reviews. We could do it. Actually, we could open it right now as well, because according to our guideline, we are the ones who run call for volunteers. But in reality, it's I can self that. Some other things that we have, it's our non-com. We do need to review our guideline on selection of our non-com representative. Okay, what else? I'm sure there are some others. But these are currently hot ones. So by the next call, we all look at the review rejection action guideline. I see Bart's hand is up. Yes, Bart.
Would it be say in the window? Say this isn't based on a mind map we used in September, I believe. March this year. It's almost September. Would it be helpful if I use this outline and put in some dates of what is, say, some are marked completed and some aren't, and which we are working on, so you have a better and full overview? Because, say, some of the stuff has been... So we moved forward, so like with the administrative ones, and some of them have been become obsolete or are interpreted wrongly. So my suggestion is that we revisit this again next call, and then with a kind of table with end dates, start dates, and maybe even with, say, who is... He's taking the lead on these different guidelines at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. Yes, we definitely will need to revisit the mind map and see what other guidelines, what are the guidelines we're working on, which ones we put on hold because of the approval action guideline that needed to be developed quickly. Nevertheless, I think so. We work now on this rejection action, and I think we could start looking at this NOMCOM guideline. At least I will take it and see what we have there. Stephen, please.
Yeah, this whole section on CCNSO's petition decisional participant is covered in the rejection guideline draft that I've developed and will circulate. So I think all of that part of the work plan can go away as it's incorporated within the rejection action guideline draft. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Stephen. Bart?
Stephen, have you addressed the questions from section 6.G as well? Say that section 6.G of the bylaws. So these are, if you look at them, so I've listed them in here. It's parts of are specifically for the rejection action procedure, puts parts of them on. So it's a bit of power related. Or maybe it's more of a checklist.
All right, my focus has been on what's required in Annex D from a procedural standpoint. I will go back and review Section 6 and take a look at that. If I've got an issue there, that may actually delay distribution of the draft for a day or two while I absorb that. But I will go back and look at that, and I will let you know what I find. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Okay, so I think the plan is more or less clear. And the proposal would be that, okay, we have approximately 2 calls per month. It would be a good, during one of the calls each month, we look at the work plan and see what else needs to be done to make sure that we are on track and we understand what's going on. Okay, so that's I think all for today. We have planned for the next call. So what about the next call? So when should we have one? Generally in 2 weeks, which would make it Monday 9/11. Is it okay for everyone in 2 weeks? Okay, 11th September. See you all on the call. Exchange emails in between. And I hope that you will have the rejection action in your mailbox this week. So Bart and I will have it today, and then we'll start working on it and send it to you. Okay? So thank you very much. Have a nice rest of the day, and chat with you in 2 weeks. Thank you. Bye.